Welcome to the Golf Podcast, presented by Golficity, where we bring you the tips, instruction, and support you need to get the most out of your golf game. And now your hosts, Frank and Mike.
Welcome to episode 15 of the Golf Podcast. Today we've got a special treat for you. We're going to have Dr. Paul McCarthy. He's a co-author of the book, The Successful Golfer, Practical Fixes for the Mental Game of Golf. Paul's going to be on the show. He's going to be talking about a couple things that common things that we all struggle with. We're going to talk to him a little bit more about that. Mike, how's everything going on your end?
Everything's good, Frank. Just counting down the days to the end of the year. Then we turn over to fantasy golf starting back up on the first weekend of January out in Hawaii. I'm excited to start watching something than my terrible football team on TV Sunday. And, just getting ready for the holidays.
Excellent. Yeah, don't forget, everyone, check out. We have our fantasy picks that come up on the site every week. But, Mike, talking about the mental game, is there something that you feel like that you've struggled with? I know it's a common thing for all of us.
Yeah, we talk about the pre-shot routine a lot, and then I always ask myself, you know, if I don't do the pre-shot routine, I screw up my shot, and then if I do the pre-shot routine, sometimes I'm overthinking it too much and I screw up the shot. So, you know, those are some things that I have had on my mind. I would like to learn just how to maintain the focus out there, you know, because, you know, Frank, you and I, we've been very fortunate to cover some PGA Tour events and be behind the ropes and interview some players and kind of walk hole by hole with these players. And just, you know, they're amazing how they're always locked in and nothing seems to snap their focus. Fans yelling at them and cameras, and they just stay focused. They look straight ahead. They get their club. They go up to there. They do their routine and they hit their shot the way it's supposed to be hit. So, you know, that's something that I would like to learn how to do. Really just stop snapping my focus after every single shot.
I think that's incredibly important, and that's why we talk about things like consistency and blow-up holes and the many things we've covered on the website. But, you know, without further ado then, let's bring Dr. Paul, let's go right to his interview, because Dr. Paul McCarthy, because he is a sports psychologist, and this is why a lot of professional golfers will hire people like Paul to come in and work on their focus and help improve their focus, because they realize how important of an aspect of the game that is. So let's jump right into the interview. Okay, we'd like to welcome Dr. Paul McCarthy to the show. Good morning, or perhaps better, good afternoon over there in the UK.
Yeah, it is the afternoon just here, so it's a little bit stormy outside. We're surviving.
You getting? We're getting snow here, so I imagine whatever you're doing is better than what we have.
Just about.
So, Paul, you're a registered sports psychologist and co-author of the book, The Successful Golfer, Practical Fixes for the Mental Game of Golf. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and about the book?
Yeah, I'm a chartered psychologist with the British Psychological Society, and for our chartered status is in sport and exercise. I spent a lot of time working in professional sport, some in football, tennis, golf, but mainly I spend my time in golf now. And I also research on that side of the game when I get a chance.
I gotcha. And you play as well, correct?
Yeah, I play as well when I can fit it in around everything else.
We know that feeling. So, Paul, one of the things that I find interesting is that so many people say that golf is 90% mental, yet so few people take that statement to heart. And what I mean by that is that we see a lot of people spending countless hours and dollars working on the physical aspects of their swing, and yet they neglect to put too much time or effort into improving the different aspects of their mental game. And you even begin your book with the famous Bobby Jones quote saying, "The width of any green, the length of any putt, or the height of any putter is just 5.5 inches, the space between your ears." So if we all agree, and at least on the surface, everyone seems to say that the mental game is so vital, why do you think it is that we see so few amateur golfers actually working to improve that aspect of their game?
I think that all the marketing in the game is pushed for power and distance, and everything else is kind of left behind. And because the mental game is such, is the least tangible of all games. It's very difficult to get to. And for that reason, it's easy to see change when you hit the ball a little bit longer or hit it a little bit more accurately. And that comes from a change in clubs or a change in instruction.
Mm-hmm. So you find it could be even that people, it almost is a little bit discouraged with how challenging it can be to improve the mental game, that they're looking for those quick and easy fix.
I think so. Yeah. I think that comes around too quickly, that they want instant change rather than a prolonged change, something like that you would have with a skill change in the game, you know, whether it was to change an element of your swing or, you know, even learning to get fitter will take, could take 6 weeks or 12 weeks or longer.
I got you. So it's almost like that instant gratification that people are looking for.
Yeah, I think so. It is that's natural in a world where we get most of what we want right now. The expectation that it should be there in golf is, I suppose, is a natural one. But the context of support requires more, I suppose, more patience than you would expect in sport.
So true. And just thinking about all the different commercials that we're bombarded with of the latest driver, as you said, that 15 more yards or whatever it may be. So we're always looking to that equipment and swing and equipment and swing, but not really going back to how we approach it, the game mentally.
Yeah, I suppose that's right. It is. Golf is probably like some other sports and unlike a lot of others, and the nature of the context of what golf is.
All right. So let's jump right into the next question I have here. And in the first section of your book, you list the top 50 faults that are affecting most golfers' mental games. And just glancing through there, you know, we can immediately see some common themes pop up. Things like frustration, loss of confidence, worrying about playing badly or how you're scoring, doubting yourself, etc. It's all themes that are mentioned many times. Why do you feel that these negative feelings are so prevalent in the game of golf? Essentially, why is it that we're so hard on ourselves out there? What are the few things that you can do to start to change that mindset?
I suppose lots of people begin to play golf, and not only golf, but other sports as well, with a view of themselves that perhaps isn't adapted well enough for the game. So we expect that when we're in school, if we write an essay or do math questions, that we can do them and possibly get them right, or with a little bit of change we can get them right. But the nature of sports skills and sport and learning and performing in a variable environment is too much really for us to ask for perfection or even near perfection. So it is natural, I suppose, that we behave as humans demanding more of ourselves but not actually getting it. And I think what we're looking for is a way that we can lay off ourselves in terms of expectations and accept a little bit more about what's going on. And one of the things I notice a lot is people play golf, or, you know, they judge themselves where the balls land rather than their preparation for whatever it is they were going to do. So in terms of getting lined up and preparing and so on. And I think if people could learn to play golf around the ball rather than where the ball lands, they would benefit more in the long run.
So it's definitely a mindset shift that we're talking about.
I think so, yeah. And the strange thing about it is, regardless of the level, when people go up to play at the highest level, say the European Tour, the same issues that arise as an amateur seem to come out even in the highest level of the professional game.
Absolutely. Yet one thing that I find that's interesting is that, and I think what amplifies our frustration as amateurs is that it doesn't seem that way. At least from this side, you know, and watching the pros on TV, we don't see that they're struggling the way that we struggle week in and week out. And I know one of the big struggles that we've had is with consistency, and a lot of amateurs have that, and things like we talk about on the website, things like blow up holes, and, you know, many of us will find that, you know, we're playing well one day, poorly the next, or even fluctuating hole by hole. But yet the pros, at least it doesn't seem that way to us. It seems like every week, you know, they're playing almost every day of the week, and it seems like they're within a couple strokes, they're putting up excellent scores every week. So can you elaborate a little bit more on that? Are they struggling with the same thing?
Well, I suppose yes, in one sense they are, but their struggles are different. One thing that we would notice is that the players seem to be moving in different circles. Say, for example, they get onto a tour, they're traveling a lot more. They're away from home. They're competing, ideally Thursday to Sunday, and their organisational side of their life, working with other coaches, with a performance manager and so on, adds in new stresses that are away from the course. Actually playing on the course for some people is a distraction from all the other things that are going on in their life. But their level of consistency is relative as well. You know, if they're all plus handicap golfers, they expect to be somewhere around those regardless of the courses that they're playing on. As we move further up the ranks, the amateurs, typically with higher handicaps, are more likely to see the inconsistencies that reflect the handicap in the game. So in actual fact, the amateur has to find a lot more patience and should be more patient with themselves rather than seeing what is possible at a professional level. What they're doing with their time at an amateur level probably reflects the time that they've invested in the game.
So is it patience? Do you feel like that's a key aspect to gaining consistency? Or what other things would you say that an amateur could take away of how to gain a little bit more consistency in their game?
Yeah, well, I think it's quite simple. Most people can read any book and learn a little bit about pre-performance routines or pre-shot routines, about preparing themselves from distractions and so on. The issue really is about not that whether they know it, but it's whether they're actually doing it. So it is common sense, yes, most people know, but they're not practicing that. So what I would say is that even if it was a pre-shot routine was the one thing a person would work on through the year, that the time they spend working on that should be the consistent element of their game, that the way in which they select a club, make a choice about a shot, step into it and prepare, should be the thing that will be consistent about them, regardless of the conditions or everything else that varies around them.
I agree. And I think Mike and I have covered this a little bit in the past, and we've actually both been working on this pretty extensively, is I think the pre-shot routine is a great place to start. And what we liken that to is a lot like in basketball, taking a foul shot. And you'll see that, you know, we see it every week in and week out. If you're watching basketball, that every single guy, they'll use the same routine throughout their entire career because it's taking away a lot of those distracting factors and things like that. So can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. Well, I think lots of people, again, once they know a routine and have learned that the routine becomes routine, and that in itself maybe requires something to freshen it up so that it should be, yes, it is a physical routine, but it should be also psychological in terms of its preparation. So the fact that you might go through a routine and not feel better before you hit the shot doesn't mean, well, I suppose it means simply that your routine isn't working well for you. To give you a sense of confidence, to give you a sense of concentration before you hit the ball or stroke the putt or whatever. So in that sense, you might have a physical routine, but the mental side of that routine ought to be the part you spend time working on. And one of the very simple ways of doing that is that people use the physical routine, maybe the swing, so their preparation swing, as a way of saying, yeah, this feels like a good tempo, or I feel in control here. And then they're taking that into their shot. One of the things I work a lot with amateurs and professionals is about maintaining the tempo of their swing, regardless of the context. So part of their pre-shot routine is to make a swing that will mimic the swing that they will use for the shot, but at a controlled level. And then we would consistently prepare that time and time and time again, until they feel like, regardless of the context, they could engage in that routine.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And let's talk a little bit more about the mental aspect of that, the pre-shot routine in general. And one thing, you know, one thing of gaining more confidence, and one thing you talk about in the book, is things like positive goal setting, you know, self-talk, visualization. Can you talk a little bit more about those shifts? Because we find that a lot of people are on the other side. We see a lot of, as I started talking about, is a lot of negative self-talk. We see people who will go out there and say, I'm terrible at this, or there's a lot of frustration, and the visualization even works against them. I mean, we're all guilty of this. We may step up to the ball and think, you know, I hit it in the water every time on this hole. And then essentially you reproduce that. So can you talk a little bit about how to shift these other things that you talk about in the book?
Yeah, well, I would say fundamentally, most of the work that I will do initially is working with the person. And the person's image they have of themselves will be, I suppose, exaggerated when they go out to play golf. So if they are a little bit unsure, a little bit uncertain, maybe lacking confidence, under pressure that becomes an enormous distraction for them. So the demands get even greater. So what I suggest is that I like people to let go of the demands before they go playing golf, to look in the mirror and say, the person I see here, I can tolerate for the next 3.5 hours. and more that, rather than looking to others and other parts of their games and things that you like seeing in others, that you start to admire yourself a little bit more. And that's really important, so that we get a sense that we are in control and we value ourselves. If we value ourselves, we're less likely to run ourselves down, even under stress. And once we carry that new person onto the golf course, golf becomes much easier. It's easier to change, easier to play shots, because you see the challenge rather than the threat in every shot. You see an opportunity to display your skills rather than an opportunity or a threat to your skills, and a place to avoid being in that context. So fundamentally, we're trying to start with the person so that they feel good about themselves. And then the context of golf changes for them. I was just talking to somebody recently who was saying that they were talking about the demands upon themselves, that you know, they were high handicapper, they weren't able to get a par 4 on a particular hole. They thought they should be able to do it. But according to their handicap, if they were to get there in 6 shots, that would be about right, you know. But that's their expectation was, well, here's what everybody else is doing, which is fair. But in those contexts, one of the things I do is I erase the par for each hole over, say, 9 holes. And mm-hmm. I write in one that I think is fair for them based on their handicap. So par might go to 6 on one hole, 7 on another, 4 on one.
Right.
And automatically, it's much easier for them to play. They usually play better than their handicap because the demand is reduced. So rather than saying I have 4 shots to get here, they say I have 6 shots. So they start to relax because the demand is relaxed upon them, and then the execution improves.
So you're setting a much more realistic measuring stick.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So that, and I could see how that would reduce frustration and all the compounding issues that come with it. But what I really like there is you're taking a much more holistic approach. What I find is, you hear the common thing that people say often is, to get better at golf, you have to play it a lot. And part of that is because I think people have a shift in their mind that they feel that they're only really practicing their game when they're on the course. So therefore, maybe if you only get to play once a week, that's the only time you really spend on improving your game. But what I like about what you're saying is that more holistic approach, when you're working on yourself and your overall confidence, not only is that going to help you in other aspects of your life, but essentially you're working on your golf game throughout your day.
You are indeed, yes. Like, there's a classic element called frustration tolerance within rational emotive behavior therapy. And people have low or high frustration tolerance. People with low frustration tolerance, you know, they don't like sitting in traffic. They want to do something and expect it to be done. But somebody with high frustration tolerance can deal with all the irregularities in life. And, you know, they do something, they don't get a return. That's okay, they can deal with it. And golf is at least one of those places that it is tested to the limit. So the sitting in traffic, the meal that didn't come on time, etc., is a chance for you to build up a resource of frustration tolerance that you learn to tolerate more. And that's why certain people are just, they fit well in golf, because they can just deal with the irregularities,
right,
and that come with it.
That's an excellent point. And what I like in the book is that you start each of the at least the first 50 fall to start with a quote. And looking again for common themes in there, you see some of the people who are successful in the game, Tiger Woods, you know, and some of these other guys, and they look for the challenge. They embrace that challenge. They're not frustrated by it. They're not, you know, those harder situations. So that speaks well to your point of saying that that's why they excel so much in the game.
Uh-huh. I would say one other thing as well about, you know, the professionals at the highest end of the game have more time in the pressure situations to get used to them. And those who are coming up the ranks don't have as much time exposed to those conditions. So it is easier for them, I suppose, in some senses, to get used to them. Not to say that they can tolerate them a whole lot better, but they do build up a level of tolerance because of that. And they realize, like most other people should, that whatever happens, say, with a drive off the tee does not determine the outcome. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what people like Tiger and Phil Mickelson prove all the time, that they have fun getting it up and down all right. the time. That's where the game really turns on, you know. That and I think that's what I try and instill in people as well. As soon as the ball leaves your club face, we'll go find it, and then who knows what's going to happen next. We can, you know, we can have fun there.
Right. And one thing that you talk about in the book, and for the people who don't have that higher level of being able to be in those positions often, like they're not competing in those. Then maybe you have a guy who competes in one tournament a year. One of the things that I like that you talk about is transitioning that into your practice and simulating that. So instead of just going to the range and hitting a bunch of, you know, balls down range, actually trying to mentally simulate yourself in a pressure situation or hitting ball after ball as though it was your second shot, your approach shot, and so on and so forth. So there are ways, you're saying, that you can kind of simulate that and get yourself mentally prepared, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I try and take each golfer through a set of examples that might pop up in the course, but we might be able to recreate those on the range, but we can certainly go to the course maybe for a few holes and set up those situations. Where I work mainly is at the old course at St. Andrews, so the driving range is alongside the old course, and there's lots of courses near it. But it's very easy for us to say, all right, we can imagine we're here on the, you know, the third or the fifth or going down the 17th, and create a context there for the people. And it really is an issue about changing the environment to allow them to see what might be going on. I think too often we practice without the intention to take that game to the course. And there are lots of little drills that I ask people to do. One is about repeatability. So if they hit one good shot, the demand is to hit another good shot according to their standard. And then another good shot, and another good shot. Mm-hmm. So what they're having to do is, I know I've just done this, now I need to repeat it. So they have to get back into a routine and not focus on that outcome, but take themselves back to, you know, just focusing on allowing the club head to move through and hit that ball as they have done already. And that really stresses them to pay attention to their good routine, being mm-hmm. prepared, demanding less, and so on.
And I would imagine as well, also what we talked about earlier, which would be their frustration tolerance, that if they were to, you know, have a couple of really good shots in a row and they know they're tasked with hitting another one, if they happen to miss hit, not letting that ruin that streak, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. It is. That is the classic case of, it is about recovery every time and trying to deal with that. Getting onto the course is best for that, even if you were just to take three or four holes. That on a par three is a very good example, where they hit five or six shots, but wherever those balls land is exactly where we're going to play. But they don't feel any different if the ball goes onto the green or drops into the bunker or out on, say, off the green where they have to pitch it and putt. So what we're trying to do is say that we can deal with and cope better every time something doesn't go our way.
So we're thinking not only to change the mindset of dealing with it better, but also finding a degree of enjoyability in whatever happens. So for instance, not just saying you're happy when you're on the green, but you're also happy when you're in the bunker, because that's a new opportunity for you to play that shot or a new challenge, and looking at it from that positive light, correct?
Absolutely. That's it. It is that every time, that it is about the the challenge that's ahead of us. So what is this challenge we have here? And we use that as a very simple strategy to ask them every time, what is my challenge here? So regardless of where the ball goes, what is my challenge here? And when we ask ourselves that, we are saying, what is it that I have to do that's positive and focused on it, on attending to the outcome, you know, of getting it up and down or whatever. Mm-hmm. But they see it in that way.
And I would imagine that the more that's on the line, you know, practice round versus an actual competition, the more that's going to be amplified and the harder it's going to be. But that's where the practice comes in.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it is the volume of practice that is given at that level is what makes the change come about. You know, that if we, you know, whatever we're building up on the at the range, it gives us a sample of what it's going to be like when we get onto the course. And I think too much of the practice is enough of the, you know, what we're going to deal with on the course.
Right.
You know, okay. Not often enough, at least.
I gotcha. Okay. All right. Well, you know, there's a lot of great stuff here and a lot of things that people can take away from it. But one last thing that I wanted to mention is I really enjoy in the book how when we talk about the top 50 problems that you find that people struggle with in their mental game, you, not only do you assess them of how common they are, but you also talk about which ones that are easier versus more difficult to fix. That said, can you give us any quick and easy fixes, any of the what we would think of like a low-hanging fruit or something that people can take away to help improve their game immediately?
Yeah, well, I would say fundamentally it is about themselves, that whatever demand they have upon them is to reduce it or even take it away. And that for some, I would just say that just keep their eyes focused on the back of the ball. Now, the research tells us that this is a good thing to do, but if you were to do nothing else, just to focus your eyes on the back of the ball, that in itself would allow you to be able to strike the ball or stroke the ball better. Now, if that was your only focus, you're not looking at an outcome or you're not looking at a score. You are simply taking something that's within your control to make a change for yourself. And I spend a lot of time working with golfers to be able to bring their game back to something just like that, because they have the skills to execute the shots. Mm-hmm. They distract themselves very easily. So we teach them to come back to something that's as simple as that. So changing that is very easy. Anybody could look at the back of the ball, and that right. In itself gives us a fix for a lot of faults, is what I'm saying. So we try and fix the fault that fixes a lot of faults.
Gotcha. So that's a good place to start. And now, on the other side of that coin, I've heard a lot of people say not to focus on the ball, but rather to focus on the target.
Yeah. It is, I suppose, that's one of those things that, yeah, the target is what matters, and it does. But to hit the ball and stroke the ball, we generally need to look at it. We can probably get away with it sometimes, but mm-hmm. It is the one thing that gives us a sense of control about what we're doing here and now. The target, while it is important, seems to drag us away from what we would like to achieve rather than what we need to do right now. And in terms of our attention, that is mm-hmm. a distraction. So yes, it does make sense, and target-oriented golf does make sense, that we're not looking at the danger, we're looking at the target. But having said that, the only way we will get the ball to the target is paying attention to what's around us, and that is the ball right in front of us. And that's why I get people to keep their attention there, play golf around them, not out there when the ball lands, and starting to judge themselves about the outcomes.
Right. So that simple just shift of attention or focus can do wonders.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's a great place to start. So we will definitely give that a try next time we're out there. And there's way more in the book than we can ever cover today. It's just very well put together. And I love that as far as a reference point, not only just reading through the book, but being able to jump from one fault to the next, because we all struggle with different things at different times in our game. So being able to jump to the different things that you may be struggling with or where you need to put your focus is excellent. So it's excellently laid out, and we will put information in the show notes about where you can get the book, but I would imagine at any major book retailer,
yeah.
Correct? Okay.
Yes.
So
yeah.
We'll put the links in there, and everybody's invited to check that out. So
it's available as an app as well.
Oh, that's excellent. because you know we all have those with us when we're out there on the course now. Between checking them on our GPS between every shot, it'd probably be better, do better for our game to check something like this, right?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, Paul, I want to thank you again for coming on the show. The book is excellent. The tips are excellent, and we're going to look forward to trying them again when we're next time we're out on the course.
That's brilliant. It's been a pleasure.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks very much. Cheers. Thank you.
All right. So like I said, I will have a link to Dr. Paul McCarthy and Dr. Mark Jones' book, The Successful Golfer, in the show notes. You can find those by going to golfissy.com/episode15. Want to thank everyone again for tuning in. Remember, you can find us on Facebook at golfissy.com. I'm sorry, facebook.com/golfissy. You can also tweet us at golfissy or check us out on the web at golfissy.com. We'll have a spot on there where you can share your notes and share your own comments on the different articles. Mike, do you have anything you want to add?
Yeah, you know, I think that if I had an accent like Dr. Paul, I think I'd be a better golfer. Yeah. You know? but that was a fun interview. Just hearing about the stuff that we were talking about before he came on. It's so interesting. And the book, I love the book. I think it's great. I suggest you picking it up. A lot of good, useful stuff packed in there. And, I was really happy that he was on the show.
And how jealous of you when he said he did most of his work
at the old course.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable. I'm jealous. I know.
Instant jealous.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm right down the road from the municipal course, and he's sitting on St. Andrews. But
right, exactly. Yeah, I do most of my work down at the public course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so it was great having Dr. McCarthy on the show. And again, we'll have links to the book in the show notes. You can go to golfissy.com/episode15, and we'll be back next week with plenty more helpful tips. So we will see you then.